Our first speaker this morning is Nick Comerford, who needs no introduction to many of you, but he is a professor of forest soil in the Soil and Water Science Department at University of Florida and the director of the North Florida Research and Education Center. He has degrees from University of Illinois, University of Minnesota, and State University of New York, and then he decided he wanted warm weather and moved to Florida, and he's pretty well been there. So, Nick recently, he is past president of SSSA, and so he's going to talk to us today about how to advocate for forest soils.
Thank you, Mary Beth. The last time she introduced me is we were changing over department chair, or chairs, and I got a kiss at that room. Oh, that was right. Okay, I just remembered. So, I do appreciate the opportunity to speak, and I also appreciate the support that I received from this division in particular throughout the entire 3 years in the executive committee as past president, president, and then incoming president. And so thinking about the topic I was given and how to advocate for forest soils, I thought what I'd try to do is the experiences I've had, try to put that down into a series of lessons. So I broke it down into seven separate lessons that I think I've learned in the roles that I've played. In addition to the lessons, I would like to give some idea of what kinds of materials I have found and others have found useful in the advocation process. And lastly, throughout the study or throughout this talk, I think what I'd like to do is make some recommendations of what this division could do to be very proactive. The lessons come from two basic experiences. The one I've really incredibly enjoyed has been in the presidential role of the society. It's been a real learning experience through our science policy office in Washington, D.C. We have been led by Carl Glassner, who you'll hear from later, and other people in that office in an advocacy role, and we've learned quite a bit about the advocacy process in that respect. And secondly, for the last 4 years, I've been the director of an experiment station in Florida. Florida, the main campus is in Gainesville, but we have 11 research and education centers throughout the state. And those, about half the faculty in our College of Agriculture are not on campus but are throughout the state working with clientele directly and working with elected officials directly in those areas. And it gives us a great opportunity to advocate for the university. My center in particular in North Florida, just outside of Tallahassee, Florida, has been described as we are the French Foreign Legion for the University of Florida. They have stuck us down in the middle of enemy territory of Seminoles. And our ability to get our message across really depends on how the football games went on Saturday. So far, it's been great because we've both been losing. So who do we advocate to? Or my Brazilian wife, who's taking English, tells me it should read, to whom do we advocate? Clientele is a big one for a lot of us. In forest soils, our clientele might be the local tree farmers. Local and state agencies, our Division of Forestries, Division of Environmental Protection, Agriculture Consumer Sciences, federal agencies like the Forest Service, and on a broader scale, USDA. And often, and becoming more and more important, is our advocacy to our own university administrations, particularly in the role of soil science and forestry, and trying to tell them that we're actually necessary for a coherent and healthy university and giving our students the best possible opportunity for job growth. Why do we advocate both soils and forest soils is another question we probably should deal with before going into the lessons learned. Many of us in this room, our university, we advocate for research dollars. And if you've been paying attention, it's an incredibly important role these days. If you're an ARS employee, it doesn't look good into the near future. That advocacy role is something that we take very seriously within the society, and that through forest soils, I think we can play a much stronger role to help people like Carl Glassner and the Science Policy Office into the future. We advocate for the support, or in some cases, even the survival of our profession. I don't think our profession is as in much dire straits as we might have heard at the town hall meeting last night, or as we hear and see in publications. I think when we look at some of the new opportunities for soil scientists, and we heard also yesterday that there's almost unlimited opportunities for employment of soil scientists, just not the way we tend to think of it in the past, this is important. But we have to advocate for that support. We also advocate for support within our university. I keep hearing Dale Johnson has said this for years, is that within his university, he's been asking for support on keeping the soil science programs going. I can tell you in my own department, in University of Florida, the need to advocate to our deans and to our deanlets is incredibly important in order to get the kind of research dollars as well as support dollars and just overall support higher up the line through administration is incredibly important, and we can't forget that role. And having the right kind of materials to give to our deans to support us or to get the support of our deans, as well as the right kind of materials to go to our clientele, I think is an important issue, and we can talk about that to a small degree. We also support for education about forest soils. So how many times, and I've been asked this a lot, but how many times have you said, oh, why do you study forest soils? You know, why not tomato soils? Why not corn soils? It's a funny question, but it's a question that being in a soil science department and having agronomy as a separate department, we tend to be asked that all the time. And so just having that education process of why forest soils is important and a distinct area within the community of soil science, I think is a reasonable thing to be concerned about. Also, I think we're in an environment nationally where general support for science, that we are scientists, whether we're professionals or we're at the university, we still are all scientists practicing in one fashion or the other. And there is a war on science. And if you will listen to our keynote speaker this year, Chris Mooney, he's written two books. One is The Unscientific America, which I think he will concentrate on in his talk this time around. The other one is The Republican War on Science. And it's not a fallacy. There is a war on just logic that's going on at many levels within our governments today, everything from the state, at least the state of Florida, and what I hear about Texas, the state of Texas, and all the way up the line to the national level. So that kind of advocacy from the grassroots is incredibly important and, I believe, has a huge effect on what the future can be. And we have to advocate within our own soil science side of America. We are going under discussions, and Tom Fox is in the audience, on how we should reorganize, if we should reorganize. I have always said that forest soils has been the premier society division in the society that has advanced and been innovative. We were the first ones to have had a cotillion. Nobody else has had a cotillion as a division. We're the first ones to bring alcohol into our poster sessions. I mean, we have a very strong and beautiful legacy that we can pass on to the rest of the society. So let me go down. I've broken this into what I can seem to be 30 or 7 different lessons. All right? 7 different lessons. Maybe you can add to these in the discussion. The first lesson to me is never assume your audience has some idea of what is soil science. And I've got 3 good examples on why I think this is the number one lesson. The first one, without fail, when I tell them, they ask me, what do you do for a living? And I say, I'm a soil scientist. And they go, that is fantastic. Solar science? I can't believe I'm talking to somebody who works in solar science. I say, no, soil science. And they go, what? We don't have great name recognition out within the community. Another example, and this is a very depressing example because it comes from my own university. At the University of Florida, we have an orientation of new students with their parents called Preview. They bring in the students, they bring in the faculty, their parents, they take them on a tour of campus, they show them all the good things, they avoid the bars, they show them what all the different programs are. And they explain that the University of Florida is one of the universities in the country that has so many diverse majors that you can even get a degree in soil science. And when you hear that, that's fantastic. They're highlighting soil science until you realize that this is always followed by abundant laughter by the audience. I keep thinking, why would they laugh about soil science? And I reckon it's because nobody knows what soil science is. And the most depressing example I can give, as Carl is very aware of this one, is we went as an executive committee with Carl to a meeting 2 years ago with the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. Very exciting for me, you know, going up and talking with people that change the world, that set the policy for in many cases, things that can affect world action. And we sat in front of this group, about five or six representing different areas, and the person in charge said this: I had to look up in Wikipedia what was soil science before coming to this meeting. I mean, that's the highest levels of policy. People are don't even know something that they're dealing with science policy, had to look up what was soil science. That's the bad news. The good news, and I think Carl can support me on this, this last year when we did the same thing, they knew who we were. We had developed, I think, a reasonable relationship with Carl's activities on the Hill as well. And we're making those kind of inroads, and that's what advocacy does. It at least gets our name out there. But I had to look up in Wikipedia what was soil science. So I think everybody should go to Wikipedia and figure out if they're actually looking up the right thing, if soil science is adequately described there. Lesson two. It is much harder to advocate for soil science because we don't represent a commodity. This is not necessarily the same for forest soils because we're somewhat associated with forestry. But we do have that relationship because soil science is relatively unknown. We are not, as soil scientists, a commodity group, although we help with a commodity group. We don't have great name recognition, which I think my first lesson has taught me. We don't have an industry necessarily standing behind us. Many of the things we do might be contrary to the industry that people say we support, because we're not only forest production, we are also environmental protection. And our clientele really isn't an industry. Our clientele is society. Our clientele are those agencies, state and federal, even more local than state, that take care of society. And those agencies are now under tremendous attack at both the state and the federal level. So advocacy is incredibly important, even in forest soils, because I think we're in a battle right now. We're fighting for our lives in many respects, not relative to just soil science, but relative to science in general. With forest soils, like I said, this is a little bit less true because we are associated with the forest industry, but I think those issues still pertain, and for me, this is still the number two lesson that I've picked up working with Carl and others out of the Science Policy Office. Lesson three for me is, it could even be number one, is that advocacy, another name for advocacy, is education. It's our job as advocates, because we don't have name recognition, is to teach people what is soil science and to do a good job of it. Before we can advocate to a group, we need to make sure that that group we're talking to understands the significance of our science to their bottom line. That's something we just do not do as well as we should, particularly at the local level. We need to let people know what is soil science and why it is important to them. Soil Science Society of America is proactive, very proactive in this respect, for soil science in general. I think we're going to have to work closer with Carl as a division to make sure that forest soils is also well represented within that. I don't know to what degree Carl will talk about this, but maybe in the discussion, if he doesn't cover some of these issues, we can, because that Science Policy Office, we're incredibly thrilled with. What it does for us as a profession, I think most of our members simply do not understand. President Obama's inauguration address mentioned soils several times. I can point to Carl and his group on why that was included in that inauguration address. Small point, but incredibly important point. We have a Soils Caucus in the House of Representatives. That Soils Caucus then tries to educate staff members and representatives about issues. Forest Soils has been represented in that. Our own Dan Neary, I don't know if Dan's here or not, but Dan gave a training session on forest fire and forest fire management. We've done a wide variety of things. If you were at the town hall meeting last night, I think there was a list of the kind of things that we had. Probably the most popular was the effect of soils on the quality of wine and free wine tasting that went along with it. So I think that's a lesson we also learned, is the more drunk we can get our representatives, far more susceptible they are to being advocated to. We're developing white papers. We have developed white papers within the society. A white paper doesn't have to be a tremendous amount of work. We're talking about a short publication that sort of sets the policy or suggests the policy. We've got white papers in the Society on carbon sequestration and nutrient management. We're now working on one to deal with ecosystem services, soil ecosystem services, which are not well elucidated if you go to different societies and they talk about their ecosystem services. you know, the soil becomes more of a black box. We have the opportunity to define for the scientific community what are those services that soils are responsible for, and then forest soils are responsible for. Larry Morris teaches a class on forest and soil ecosystem services. So these kind of things then I think blend over into our educational programs. You saw at the meeting today these public service announcements. How many have seen the public service announcements? Just raise your hand. Not many people. All right, you need to go look at three public service announcements: soil and human health, soil and water, soil and food. 30-second, professionally made public service announcements. If you remember the Gumby videos on Sunday mornings, you're going to like these PSAs because they're made in the same kind of philosophy as the Gumby videos were. But highly productive. We took the Chuck Rice, our president, took this to Europe to a meeting of soil science societies. It was incredibly received. They wanted them right away to show them around, and they've said, we'll give you money if you make more. So people recognize just a 30-second blurb to the general public that says this is the importance of soils. Go see those PSAs. I think we're still giving out thumb drives with the PSAs on them, but they're on a website. You can download them for free. For goodness sake, get them out as much as you can. I'm giving them to every extension agent in my state, and I'm trying to send them to our communications office so they can get them on TV. And I recommend on an advocacy basis that every member of our society, and S7 should lead that role, get these things out to the public because they do a great job of showing what soil science is about. Great example from my own life, my representative is somebody that does not believe in science. He knows nothing about science, and when you talk to him, he's incredibly proud of the fact that he knows nothing about science. There's a huge educational role here, and he's not alone. And I think if you read the books by Chris Mooney, you'll be impressed to what degree he's not alone and how high it goes up. We are really in a fight. So S7 should be proactive. We should be proactive about defining what our forest soil ecosystem services, just what they are, how they operate, how they function, how they're regulated, and what the value of them is, or what the value of them are. I'll check with my wife on that. So what you've got to do is understand that education is incredibly important in advocacy. Education is something that advocacy could be defined as. Lesson number four is to learn the objectives of those to whom you are advocating. And you'll note that my English here is fairly proper, at least according, again, to my expert. So you've got to put your materials in a form that speaks directly to the objectives of their interests. In this small figure, it says, two dogs, one at the computer, says, "We don't need an internet startup to make millions. Don't you get it? We're talking dogs." What you need to do is you have to understand, you have to be able to express to those people you're advocating to the importance of your science. Speak to their objectives. Speak to their bottom line. Speak to their interests. And you need to make them understand that your profession is central to them meeting their objectives. Here's two dung beetles. One says, "Now what do we do with it?" And the other one says, "Beats me." Well, we're soil science. Not that that's a good corollary. Probably should have thought this figure out a little bit better going into the meeting. But what it says to me is we've got this great thing. We've got to show people what it means to them. They shouldn't be saying, we shouldn't go into somebody's office and say, "We're soil scientists," and they're telling us, "Well, it beats me. I don't have any idea why you're here and what you can do for me." Lesson number five is leave with an understanding of what to do next. Never leave your advocacy meeting without a plan to go to the future. You know, I'm going to provide this to you. I'm going to meet with you again. We're going to get together on this. There's no point in going and advocating if you're just going in and talking and nothing. There's no plan coming out of the meeting. So make sure you have a plan coming out of the meeting. What did you say you would do? Will there be another meeting? If so, on what topic and when? Are you going to provide some key information, and exactly what is that, and when are you going to provide it? All right? If you're going to advocate, you have to have a follow-up. And lesson six is a corollary of that. Then deliver on anything you promised as soon as possible. If not, you will be forgotten. And I commend Carl and his group for this. Every time we go on an advocacy tour, Carl comes back and we're writing, well, Carl writes the letters. We sign them about thanking for the meeting, We have deliverables. He gets those deliverables together, and he tries to get us active and help get that together as soon as possible. It's an important lesson, I think. It shows you're serious. It shows you're a professional. Lesson seven, the last lesson I have to give is that constantly follow up. Develop relationships where possible, then do it over again when the politics change. Advocacy is not a one-time meeting. It's not a one-time issue. It is a way of life for many people, should be a way of life for us in science. Tools to use through your advocacy process. The Soil Science Society, if you go to our webpage, we have good examples. We have these one-pagers. Education about soils. We need to make these for four soils. We need to have a committee in this division that is an advocacy committee that makes materials that all of us can use at a local level, at a state level, and that we can provide and interact with Carl on at a national level. And I think I'll speak for Carl because I've worked with him a bit. I think he would be very appreciative of that kind of input. We have good examples with SSSA. We should try to mimic those examples because they're proven. Carl's proven them on the Hill. These PSAs, they're entertaining tool. They introduce soils. I think they're going to be very effective. The word's not out on them yet. We don't know how effective they're going to be, but the initial reaction has been incredible. And I think they're going to be very useful. I think we need to work with Carl. We need to work with our board rep has to work at the board level to make sure that Forest Soils winds up on these future PSAs. The Smithsonian, what was the one group, one division that was best represented at the Smithsonian? There's one of two. One was S5, the podology end. But get past podology, all the examples were Forest Soils examples. We were incredibly well represented by the Smithsonian, only because, not because we had people advocating for S7, is because we are cool. I mean, we have the cool science. And that's kids like cool science. We are the cool science. And then asks. Carl can help us with this too. When you go to advocate with a local representative, you leave a one page of what you want from them or what you can provide to them. So they're not going to read. They don't like to read. In my representative's case, I question whether he can read. But the point is, you leave something behind. And these tools are the kind of things you can leave behind. What we do in my research center now, which I think is working, is we do success stories. We don't care. We're not going to teach these guys the science. They don't care about the science. What they want to know from us is, what's the dollar level? What are we doing for the state on a dollar basis? What are we doing for the state on a job basis? And I'll give you one example. Cotton hardlock, I was talking earlier. Well, I'll give you a different example than I talked to people earlier. Asian soybean rust. In 2004, a hurricane blew Asian soybean rust in the southern United States. Asian soybean rust is like a Canadian. It overwinters in Florida and then moves north in the summer. All right, it happens to overwinter on kudzu, which the southeast is favorably endowed with. And then it moves to soybeans and then just moves more, marches all the way north. Our center is the national center for Asian soybean rust research because we're loaded with kudzu and we can study it all year long. We've been able to come up with a scheme of fungicides and management to avoid the impact of Asian soybean rust. The government has estimated that research alone saves farmers throughout the country $300 million a year. $300 million a year. It's about a $500,000 investment every year to run a scheme that we run, and then it's about a $10 million investment up front for the research. But it's getting us $300 million a year for the cost of a continuing cost of $500,000 a year. These are the things that I think, as advocates, you worry about. You don't tell them how we solve the Asian soybean rust problem. You tell them how much money it's putting into the pockets of their constituents. So, recommendations. Form a Forest Soils subcommittee. Work with Carl Glassner here to find opportunities to advocate for Forest Soils in Washington, D.C. That could be through the Soils Caucus. That could be through a variety of mechanisms. I think interacting with Carl, with this committee, and maybe we can ask Carl if this is, you know, how these ideas fit with him during a discussion period. Develop materials for Forest Soil folks to use in their advocacy, and that they can adjust to their specific circumstances. So, in fact, templates of materials that we can use for advocacy that is based on ecosystem services, that's based on dollars, that's based on jobs. I hate to say it, forget the science. The science is the basis of how much money we're putting in other people's pockets. So that's pretty much on time, I think. I just leave you. I've really enjoyed working with the Soil Science Society of America. I'm rotating off this year. But I'm also with the University of Florida. Our football team has been incredibly poor this year. We've just recruited this new basketball team, and we're hoping this team will bring us to success. They're going to be very formidable, I think, on the court, particularly in high humidity. Okay, with that, I'll turn it back over to Mary Beth.
Thank you. So we have some time for questions and for discussion. You'll notice in the schedule there are some minutes for discussion. So let me ask, open it up for questions.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And speaking not from a forest soils perspective, but from a Soil Science Society Executive Committee perspective, I think it's going to be more important in the future. We have societies out there that are hurting. I think you heard the announcement last night that we have that the National Society of Consulting Soil Scientists has now disbanded and joined the Soil Science Society of America. And so we just added 600 new members. I think there's other opportunities like that, either to work through this management organization of Access that we've formed to work with our, you know, to do the money management, if you will, and the people management of the three societies. I think we're actively seeking societies like that. And then range management is one of those, I think, that could be much more closely aligned with us in the future and then could start providing a better input to these to our S7 division, depending on how Tom's task force comes out and what those recommendations are in any, if any, reorganization. So that's a good point. The reaction, if we go on the Smithsonian, they think that was one of their most recently successful exhibits. They went into it thinking this is going to be a dog. Honestly, they thought it was going to be a dog. It wound up being one of the most interactive exhibits they've ever done. They were from the Smithsonian staff. They were incredibly surprised and incredibly happy about it. From that Smithsonian exhibit, I don't know if you know it, we produced one children's book that sold very well. We now have two more children's books going in that line. One, I think, is in press now, I believe, and another one is in preparation. So the Smithsonian hasn't died. It's been to two different cities already on a traveling exhibit. The USDA, I think, had put some money in. I'm not clear, Carla, you probably know better than I in terms of what. It's still traveling right now, I believe. We'll store it at our headquarters, but there's something going on with USDA about maybe putting it in Washington, D.C. on a long-term basis. Yeah, so we're not sure. Ellen Bergfeld is probably a little bit up on that. But it was incredibly successful. It continues to be successful. Just unfortunately, this all happened at a time when the economy blew apart. We expected it to go to 10 or 20 cities on a traveling tour. That did not happen because nobody had any money to support it after 2008. But yeah, very, very positive on a national level and getting the idea of soils out. And I think the PSAs will be more mobile, will hold people's attention. And I think, hopefully, the society will continue to do those and we'll have a whole library of PSAs down the road.
Are the PSAs showing at the society?
If you go down to the exhibit hall and go to the SSSA exhibit center, the sort of the history, you'll see the PSAs on a continual loop. We also had a movie video contest about soils. You'll see the winners of the video contest down there. And then there's also a short spiel about the Smithsonian by Pat McGonick.
Another big thought is to inspire you to take action. As a former dean, I've been involved in a lot of the things that David has been alluding to. And I'll remind us of the staff meeting is one of the most critical things that you can do. You get a request from one representative staff, don't blow it off. It's something that can really pay big dividends.
And one of the things that I hear some, I read mine, but so I hear some of you saying, well, I work for the government, so I'm not allowed to do this. And that's not entirely true. We're not allowed to advocate or lobby, but we can educate and inform. And I've, in the past, worked fairly closely with our local staffers, congressional staffers in West Virginia, and built up a good relationship, and that's actually very helpful. When the questions come or when there's a problem, if you have a relationship with the local staffers, it can be very helpful. It's, you know, it's a little more dicey when you work for the federal government to go into Washington and lobby, as Carl knows. We have all sorts of problems. People we can and can't talk to when we go into D.C., but you can work at the local level, and certainly there are a number of constituencies, as Nick pointed out, who need education. So it's always okay to educate. Let me ask if there are other questions for Nick or comments, Stephen?
Nick, thanks for a great talk. I'm wondering what the basis for this anti-science sentiment of your representatives and we have our share in our district in Blacksburg. But where do you see that anti-science coming from? You should be going in the other direction, I would hope, but it's like we're going backwards.
I think I would tend to agree. I describe it more as it is a success of ideology over intellect. If you buy into a certain ideology and you're not open to the facts, you're not open to critical thinking, then it doesn't matter what our education programs are. And there's a group of people, young representatives in Washington, D.C., that represent all of us locally, many of us locally, that fall into that category, in my view. If you have ideology, then the science that is counter to your ideology is termed junk science. So climate change is a great example. 98 out of 100 scientists will believe in two things. One is that the Earth is warming. Since 1920, it's a straight line. And secondly, well, three things. CO2 is increasing. There's no doubt about it. It's increasing. And that the increase in CO2 is due to human activity. 98 out of 100 scientists that work in these areas will agree to that. Every single scientific society on the face of the planet that deals with these issues, with the exception of five, will accept those premises. Those five happen to be the oil geologists, and they don't disagree. They just don't take a position on it. All right? So you can either agree with 98 out of 100 people, or you can take those two out of 100 and buy into what they say. If your ideology matches those two, then that's your base. That's who you believe. And why the problem is there, it escapes me as well. I put it down again to education. Probably at the earliest levels, we have not taught critical thinking. We're teaching to exams right now. I mean, we go into schools in my district. I live in the only district in Florida that the majority of the population is a minority population. It's probably one of the poorest counties, the second or third poorest county in the state. And being in the southeast and being in a poor county, that says a lot. All right. We can't go into the schools at some times to help because they say we can't. We got to teach to the exam. If you look at the curricula, while it seems to be improving marginally, they don't teach students. We don't teach students to think. We teach them to regurgitate. Some of that's very important. Being able to learn by rote is a good way of learning, but learning by rote exclusively without having to critically evaluate things, particularly at the higher levels of education, I think is where we've really failed, and I think it shows up as they get older. Yes?
Yeah, I was suggesting with regard to that, the business of ideology versus intellect is nothing new. Galileo certainly knew about it, and lots of other people in the past. And humans don't change very much over time. And if we don't consider that there might very well be a genetic component in that, but not only a matter of education, then we're really going to put this out. We won't get it.
Yeah, that's... I'm not sure I want to get into the genetic component of that, but because I'd say
80%. I pretty strongly suspect it's a genetic component.
I would say 80% of my 80% of my clientele that I work with in both cattle farming and forestry would tell you that evolution is a boondoggle. And these are the people that are using the forages that we breed to improve their feed efficiency. So there is a total disconnect there between what they sort of accept science when it puts money in their pocket, but they don't accept science for other reasons under other circumstances that continues to elude me, but is somewhat related to religion, which I don't want to get into either. Yes. My vice president has a real nice phrase that I've tended to use over and over again with in this kind of group of people, is that you're entitled to your own opinions. You're just not entitled to your own facts. And so what we do is we have to talk facts. And if the facts are not convincing to change the opinion, then you're really not, it's just not it's a waste of time with that group of people. You've got to find the groups of people that are open to ideas that you can work with. But there is a group of people you just can't convince, because ideology is very strong and there's a total absence of intellect.
Thanks, Nick. Nice talk. In religious education or talking with representatives, is it also important to not only hit soil science but also to talk about critical thinking? Because it sounds like the issue here is not that soil science is important.
I think it's a good point, and the way I would respond to that is we have to find those specific things that hit home with them. For example, I talk about climate change, but really you talk about climate change and ocean acidification. Now, if you're in a state of Florida and you're not worried about what happens to the ocean, you're out to lunch. I mean, ocean acidification, we've had a 67% increase in the acidity of oceans in the last so many decades, and that is pure high school chemistry. That's pure carbon dioxide increasing in the atmosphere, the partial pressure changing carbon dioxide dissolved in the water, which forms carbonic acid. I mean, this is something that anybody who at least was awake for high school chemistry could probably get their head around. And if you're, and for somebody like Florida, where water is so important, the coral reefs are so important, the fisheries are so important, that's the kind of thing that we try to do in our state, in my location, to say, listen, I don't care if you believe in climate change, even though the state of Texas has been on fire. I don't think if you don't believe in that, that's fine. But here is something that the climate is doing that high school chemistry explains, that is incredibly important to our economy in this state, and you can't ignore that. So, you make small inroads, but it is not a one-time issue. It is a constant issue. Getting time with your local representatives, we find, is an incredibly difficult thing to do. For me to get time with my local representative, I go to my clientele, my important clientele, and say, hey, we need this guy to come here. They get on the phone, they call him, and he runs right over. So you've got to find those triggers, those people that he listens to, and then you'll at least have access. Access is another problem. But it's, you know, those problems are solvable just by getting with the people who have the money and having the guys with the money tell your representative that you need to talk to this guy. Those are solvable problems. Changing the mind of the representative, that problem is solved through an election. And the one thing that people really need to understand that's come out recently is the phrase, elections matter. Elections matter. And I've got a son that I can't get to vote, and I'd like to take a 2x4 to his head. I mean, well, you know, I can't do anything. Well, you're right. You won't do anything if you don't vote. But elections matter. We have a rapid response team. You've seen those emails. We also have this CCST. Will you be explaining that, Carl? Okay, so Carl will be talking about that. Incredibly important. If you want to advocate for soil science, we have the mechanism to do that. And if you know who your representative in your area is on the CSST, they would love to know who you are so you can join in the advocacy that happens on an emergency basis. You got our problem, and Tom and I talked about this the other day, our problem is within our society is communication. Outside our society is communication. We are not good at communication. We don't know how to communicate well. I think where we do it well is when we do it in a defined environment like Carl's environment on DC, where we have a captive audience. Carl has a tremendous camaraderie with people up on the Hill, and we do get good access. And I think we make changes. We make inroads, and we have a lot of coalitions with other organizations, and together as a group, I think we have an effect. I think, Carl, will you be speaking to that at all?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Perhaps one of the things that we might want to think about is the future engagement, some sort of re-session or boot camp on communication and advocacy, which is more giving people the verbiage that is appropriate and working out messages and things like that.
Yeah. And take advantage of our new members, the consulting soil scientists. Take advantage of these guys. These guys are on the ground boots of trying to make businesses work in terms of putting things in terms of money and what's important to the clientele. If they're in business, they're doing the job. If they're out of business, they're not coming here. They don't have the money to do it. So I'd say we have a tremendous opportunity here with having the consulting soil scientists now join us as part of the society and having them come here. If we're not taking advantage of them in our S7 division next year by inviting them into some kind of a session to bring some practical aspects of soil science to forest soils, we have missed the boat. We should lead in that regard. We should lead in every single regard, and we have in the past, particularly where alcohol has been concerned. But I think if we can broaden our horizons and lead in a lot of other areas, we have been the premier society in my premier division of the society in my mind, and the Soil Science Society is the premier society of the three. So we're really at the top of the heap. That's just my opinion.
All right, we're going to need to move on. Okay. Thank you one more time.